Welcome back to Mental Health Integration. This is part one of section five, and we're going to be talking about modalities. We're going to be talking about how to get well. We're going to talk about therapists and drugs and self-care and all the fun stuff. I'm excited to really share you with you on this stuff. I get really excited about these things. So anyway, we're going to jump straight in. And we're going to start talking about therapy. Now, I know what you're thinking. Do you actually need a therapist? Are therapists really necessary? I mean, we have community. We have all of these other things going on. Why do we need a therapist, too? And my response to that is, a therapist is specifically trained to help you unwind the things that really get your soul in a mess. In my own case, I see a therapist about once a month right now. I would love to see her more. I have seen therapists on a regular basis for the last, 14 years. And I've saw them on an irregular basis before that. It's a priority for me to know that I can take care of myself and that I can be my best me. And regardless of what you're going through, a therapist can help out with getting to the bottom of some of those issues. So, when we talk about therapy, is it necessary? The answer is, a lot of the time, yeah. The second question, though, is who needs a therapist? And that is a much more complicated question. Because most of the time we're asking, well, if you're normal, do you really need a therapist? I mean, I assume that if you're at a detriment, you need a therapist. Because we want to bring you back up to normal. But what if you're already normal? Do you still need a therapist? And the answer, I think, is yes. And the answer is yes, for the same reason that people go to the gym. Generally, people don't go to the gym because they're incredibly strong and powerful. They go to the gym because they want to be more strong and powerful, regardless of how strong they are. And the same is true of a counselor. You don't go see a counselor because you want to fix yourself a little bit. You go to a counselor to get better. And if there's any headroom to get better, it's a good time to see a counselor. Because the rule and the hope is improvement. We want to get better. We want to do better than we are right now. We want to be able to act better, be more freely ourselves. We don't want to be controlled by our trauma or our past. We don't want to have our memories dictate what we're going to do in the future if they aren't actually beneficial. We want to be able to move forward free. And the role of a therapist is to help you unwind all your stuff so that you can start moving forward free. Now, how does that work with mental health issues? Well, in the case of mental health issues, I would always recommend seeing a therapist because while your psychiatrist might be working with you on some things, they're not going to be working through on unwinding trauma or triggers or what has gotten you into this place. They'll be unwinding your physicality. They'll be unwinding your mental brain chemistry. They'll be doing all sorts of work there. But they're not going to be doing work asking questions like, I hear something that happened in your childhood, and you're defining yourself by that. Is that really accurate? Mostly because that's just not their role. In my own case, I have had all sorts of phrases that got stuck in my youth that defined me, whether or not they were true. The phrase, Brandon, I'm so disappointed in you, got lodged in my memory, and it became a key cornerstone in how I saw myself and how I worked and believed in myself. Is that beneficial? No, it's horribly unbeneficial. It's terrible. Why would anybody want to think that they're constantly a disappointment? That's awful. But it had lodged itself as a cornerstone of my own mental image of myself, of my own self-perception. And because of that, it dictated the ways that I grew out of that. Does that have to do with bipolar disorder? No. But it makes going through bipolar disorder harder because naturally, as I'm spinning around different parts of my own emotional consciousness, this piece, this Brandon, I'm so disappointed in you, gets stuck. And I tend to circle around and orbit that instead of being able to free myself of that and continue working on other things. So, when you have a mental health condition, should you see a counselor? Yeah. We've got to get these problems pulled out so that you don't have to worry about those. But is that the only work that you should do? No. And as someone who doesn't have a mental illness, should you probably also see a counselor? Yeah. You've got stuff. My stuff that I've worked through with my counselors is not because of bipolar disorder. It's because of family trauma issues or trust issues or things that I've been growing through. Now I would say that I am a pretty well-established, pretty secure person. And I still see a counselor because I want to get better and improve, and there's still some place to do that. So please go see a counselor. They're fantastic. That said, if you go see a counselor, what makes a good one? There are a lot of counselors. Where I'm at in the Denver metro area, there are thousands and thousands of counselors. But there are also a lot of counselors who aren't that beneficial. And there's a lot of counselors who are so beneficial, it's just incredible. So what makes a good counselor? Well, in some work Dan Siegel did, he said that the relationship that you have with your counselor actually makes up the majority of the benefit that you will get from a counselor. Can you form a really tight, solid relationship so that is trusting, that you know that you can walk through with this person? That's going to go a long way. That doesn't mean that that's the only thing you should focus on, but that's a really big point. Is this someone that you can trust? Is this someone that you feel like you can trust? Because if you can't open yourself up and be perfectly yourself, there are parts of you that are wounded that need to be worked on, that will not be worked on because they're not safe. And the only way to work on those is if you have someone safe to work on them with. And having someone safe to work on them with means you need to trust your counselor with anything, absolutely anything. In my case, I had a rule when I went to see a counselor, which is none of my entire life is off limits. I will tell my counselor anything because we need to be able to drill down and get to the bottom of things, which means a phenomenal level of trust. So you'll be able to say, I can trust you with anything. Now, they're bound by confidentiality laws and by all sorts of governing principles around their licensure, but you still need to be the person who trusts. Them being trustworthy and you trusting are two different things. And your counselor needs to be someone that you can trust. Now, beyond that, you also want a counselor who is really competent and really good at what they do. In my own case, I've worked with so many counselors, and I've done so much personal work that I don't think I could go see a counselor unless they had gone through some serious work, unless they were really, really, really good. And I knew they were really good, just because I've had so much exposure to mental health professionals and so much exposure to mental health work. I kind of know, well, what the work I'm going to have to do, it's going to be complicated and it's going to be hard, and I'm going to be a great client, but I need you to be really good. You may not need the best counselor in the world, but you need someone who's competent. And you need someone who's competent not just as a counselor, but in the areas that you need them to be competent. For example, one of my counselors was one of the most competent people in the world when it came to identity work, when it came to understanding how our identity flows and how we break off from that identity and how addictions form and how we form dependencies on things, whether it is, you know, media or video games or substances or anything. It was all about how does your identity form these things. He was not an expert in bipolar disorder. I didn't talk to him about bipolar disorder, though. I was talking to him about identity. So it was perfect. My counselor now is an expert on trauma and on working through various issues that come up. She's not an expert on, say, autism. That's great. She doesn't need to be. She needs to be really, really, really competent in the places that I need a competent therapist. And just like that, you also need a competent therapist in the areas that you need a competent therapist. If this is your first go with therapy, I would say find someone who's competent as a generalist, unless you know exactly what you need. If you know you're struggling with addictions, find an addiction therapist. If you know you're struggling with something else, find somebody who's really, really, really good in that space. And you can ask for recommendations. You can ask what's going on. But in general, competence and presence. You can also make sure that your therapist is somebody who is, when they sit down with you, you feel heard. You might trust them, but they might talk a lot, like this relationship. Unfortunately, you've had to deal with me talking a lot at you. But the role of a counselor is not to talk at you. It's to be with you, to reflect, to help pull out what's actually happening inside you and bring that to the surface so that we can work on those issues. So find somebody who's really, really good at listening, who's present, who's comfortable with the heaviest things. And what you'll find is that a lot of those counselors have had their own journeys and have worked through their own stuff. They don't just understand what you're going through. A lot of them have history with what you're going through. And because of that, they have this deep, deep knowledge. It's not just conscious, I can understand what's going on. It's, I know exactly what's going on. And because I know it, I know the next steps. I know the hard points. I know the trigger points. I know what we're going to have to walk through and what it's going to take to get you there. And we can do it together. If you can find a therapist like that, do it. In my case, being in a big market like Denver, it's really easy to find really, really great therapists just because there's so many. In smaller markets, it's a little bit harder, but with the introductions of telehealth and how big that has gotten, especially after COVID, there's a lot more opportunity than there used to be to meet with really, really competent professionals. So please find a really good therapist. This may not be in network. A lot of really great therapists do not take insurance where I'm at. And that might be the same where you're at, too. So you might have to do some extra work. You might have to pay extra. But whatever you do, do what you need to do to find somebody who's really great. And then make it a priority to do that as much as you need to in order to continue to improve and move forward. Next, we need to talk about medications. Because the first question with something like bipolar or depression is, do I need medication? There's a lot of mistrust of medications, and some of those are well-earned. A good friend of mine is a psychiatrist who went through her own mental health journey, and she said she was trained in med school to be a great psychiatrist, but not to be a really, really great psychiatrist for her patients. And the difference being that from other doctors, they had a perception of what made a great psychiatrist, but having been a patient, she had a different idea of what made a great psychiatrist. And so she became the latter instead of the former. So that said, a lot of people had bad experiences with medication. Maybe they took medication and had horrible side effects. Maybe they were prescribed too many medications. Maybe they're afraid that if they're prescribed medications, they're going to have a bad time. Maybe they believe that there's medications that are going to have toxic reactions with their body. There's a lot of reasons that people have hesitancies towards medications. But in the cases of especially acute mental illness, this is something that we just have to deal with. It's a reality that for someone like me, I cannot get better without pills. There's just no way. Pills are my lifeline to the rest of my life. If I want relationships with my wife and my family and my kids, I get to take pills. If I want to be sane and hold a job, I get to take pills. If I want to own the house that I do and have a good life, I have to go through extra steps to do that. And the first one of those steps for me is pills. So that said, are pills necessary? Well, in the cases of severe mental illnesses, almost always yes. In the cases of other mental illness, a lot of the times, yes. And that's something to talk specifically with a psychiatrist about. Your primary care doctor is trained to be everything, right? They're trained to work with broken bones. They're trained to see everything. They're trained to see coughs and colds and know the difference. And as part of their job, they also work with mental illness. And there are some primary care doctors who are incredible. Greg Knopf, who we heard about earlier, is a primary care doctor, and he is incredible. But trying to do so much lends not knowing quite as much about what's actually going on inside the brain. Which means go see a psychiatrist if possible, because their whole job is to figure out what's going on inside your brain. And they're really, really good at it because they do it all the time. They know what might work and what might not work. So, as a general rule of thumb, see a psychiatrist. If you need pills, there's no shame in that. I need pills. No shame in that. If you need to see a nurse practitioner or another person besides a psychiatrist, go ahead and do it. Do what you need. As an additional note, if you go through a hard season, because some things like depression are episodic, bipolar can be episodic as well, if you need pills for a duration of time, there is no shame in needing pills for a duration of time to get through something difficult. Make sure that you do exactly what your doctor says. Make sure you follow their advice. And make sure that you are checking in on a regular basis. If they're not working, communicate. But get on what you need to get on. If you have friends or loved ones, and they are taking a turn for the worst, it's also okay to destigmatize that. If you are not on pills, it's okay to say pills are fine. If you are on pills, it's a great time to share your story and talk about how it has been beneficial for you and how it can affect somebody else. Now, this is great to say, you know, take your pills, go see your therapist. But there is another side of this that is incredibly important. And that is, what makes a good client? The reason this is so important is because a psychiatrist and a therapist are there to read your body and read your cues and act accordingly. They're there to work with you to try and get the most out of you. They're there to support you. But you as their clients dictate what they see, what they hear, how they get their information, and what information they get. You as their client also have the ability to dictate whether or not those treatments and those modalities are going to work. As we mentioned before, if you get on pills, but you decide not to get off drugs, like, you know, an opioid or something like that, where you're struggling, if you decide not to get help with the addiction, it's really, really doubtful the medications are going to work to their full potential. If you're struggling with alcoholism and you don't want to tell your doctor, it could be that your medications don't work to their full potential. It could be that there are side effects or drug interactions that could kill you. So please tell your doctor everything, no matter what it is. Their job is to help you get well, and they can't play chemistry set in your head if they don't know what other chemicals are in there. So tell them everything. Furthermore, if your doctor says in order for this to work well, you need to sleep regularly, do your best to do that. If they say you need to make sure that you're not doing various activities, do your best not to do that. But in general, with both your therapy and your psychiatry, you need to do a few things. You need to be regular, show up every time, ready, and communicate. This means you don't miss appointments. This means you make every appointment. This means when you make your appointment, you show up, and if you need notes, you bring notes. You communicate everything that you need to with your psychiatrist or your therapist, and you give them all the tools that they need in order to help you. In some cases, you may need even to bring a friend or a family member or a spouse, because you know that you are not the best and most reliable credible source about what's going on in your own life. This is what happened to me when I was diagnosed with bipolar. I always brought one of my parents with me. They didn't need to come into the room with my psychiatrist, but I knew that I wasn't stable enough to give good feedback, and he needed good feedback. So if you need to bring someone else in the room with you, bring them into the room with you. If you need to take notes every day about what's going on and whether or not the medications are working and whether or not you're making progress, take notes and bring them into the office. If you need to look and keep a calendar of exactly how your moods have been, keep a mood calendar. Whatever you need to do to give good information and feedback, you are the only source of information and feedback that your psychiatrist is going to get. So get the best feedback you can to them so that they can make the best possible recommendations. Next, make sure you do the same with your therapist and be open and genuine. We can't work on problems in mental health without you being honest. So be just painfully honest. Because if you're honest, those problems can come to the surface. And there's no problem that's too scary. There are just problems that are hidden. And problems that are hidden, we can't fix. They just continue to get worse down there. Next, we told you to be regular with your visits. Also be regular with your work. If you need to take your medications twice a day at specific times, take them twice a day at those specific times. Do whatever you need to do to make sure that happens. If you need to set alarms, set alarms. If you need to tell your boss so that you can get a few minutes off, tell your boss. If you need to find a way to eat them with food, find a way to eat them with food. Whatever you need to do, make sure you do it. This is your permission to live your life again. Do not play around with this. Take it seriously and get it done. That means taking your pills, taking care of yourself, doing what it takes, whatever your doctor says, just do it. It also means communicating. If you're feeling super nauseous because of a drug and you don't know if you can take it because you're throwing up, you need to tell your doctor as soon as you possibly can. If you are feeling like you might be allergic to a drug, tell your doctor as soon as you can. If you are feeling like this amount isn't the right dosage, tell your doctor as soon as you can. You are not your doctor. Don't just go and change what your dosages are and what you're doing with your pills. Tell your doctor so that they're filled in all of the time. And then if they say, hey, let's try this, let's ramp this up, but if you reach a point where it gets to be too much, then stop. Then follow your doctor's advice. If they say, hey, I got to a point, it was too much, I ramped down back to where you said, write that down, show them what you need, or you know, just bring evidence of that, bring a spouse, or just tell them yourself if you have a really great memory and you're still doing really well. I have not had that great of a memory and been doing that well when I was in that position. So I always had to bring notes or had to bring someone with me. But bring feedback. Follow your schedules. Do the work. The last thing, a final note on therapy as well. It's not enough just to be authentic. You have to be willing to do the work, which is it's going to be hard and it's going to be scary sometimes. When you start looking and taking off masks that you've worn, and you start looking at who you are as a person, now that you're separate from the identity that you've given yourself, it's going to be scary. And being vulnerable is going to be scary. But all of the best work is through that. It's not, you can't skirt around it. It's not somehow you get past it. You have to go straight through it. So do your best to do the hard work. If you get homework from your therapist, that you need to do a mental map, or that you need to do a map of your age progress, or whatever you need to do, do your homework. Right? Take your healing as seriously as you can. They're taking your healing as seriously as they can, but they can't outwork you. Your progress and your work depend on your progress and your work. So just do it. Now there's another side of being a good client that's really, really important. And that is self-care. Self-care is so important because how you take care of yourself is going to dictate how well you do with all this other stuff, right? I will be the first to say, if there's a TV on, I'm just mesmerized. I turn into a zombie. So I can't. I can't leave the TV on when I'm working. I can't be around TVs if I want to get anything done. And if I want to be in good relationships with people, I meet them at coffee shops and stuff that don't have TVs because I just know. I just disappear into a zombie. All of us have different self-care things that turn into distractions. But we're going to start with some of the simplest ones. Some of the simplest ones are things like, do you sleep? I can't tell you the number of people that I've met with over the years that have said, I'm struggling with my mental health. And I've said, okay, are you doing medications, therapy? And they're like, yes, and nothing's helping. When do you go to bed? Oh, I go to bed at like 3. Really? When do you wake up? I have to wake up for work at 6. Oh, so you're getting 3 hours of sleep and trying to do therapy and medications and wondering why this isn't working for you. I wonder why this isn't working for you. And I'd go, yeah, I don't think I can change that. It's like, well, then you can't get better. Like, I can't help you decide that your healing is important. But you need to make that decision. So there are certain things that you can do to take care of yourself. The first is sleep. And I used to joke around that I treat myself like a glorified 8-year-old, you know. I still have a bedtime. I still do best when I go to bed at that bedtime. My wife is a night person. I'm a morning person. So if I go to bed at bedtime and then wake up really early, I tend to be a lot healthier and do better. But it does mean that, you know, I'm not hanging out with my wife as much because she would gladly be up until 2 in the morning every night. That's just how she functions, which is fantastic, but it's not me. And I need to do the things to take care of me. Next is things like diet. Do you eat what works for your body? I have to eat a lot of vegetables to feel good, like an absurd number of vegetables. And I've watched it and tracked it over the years, and I know that. So I eat a lot of vegetables. My wife jokes around that I'm part rabbit. But if it makes me feel good and it gives me the results that I'm looking for long term, I'm good with that. You know, I use the general rule of thumb with my diet that I eat now what's going to make me feel best tomorrow, not just what's going to taste best. And that has served me really, really well. Just take care of yourself in that way. You know, if your meds are not working great, but you drink 6 cups of coffee a day, talk to your psychiatrist. It could be that there's an interaction there that's preventing your meds from working the way they could. If you are having a few drinks every night, talk to your therapist or your psychiatrist about that. You know, see if there's something going on that's preventing your meds from working as well as they could. If you are not eating regularly, if I don't keep my blood sugar levels fairly stable, my meds don't work as well as they should. So I have to take account of that and do my best to make sure that I stabilize my own blood sugar levels by eating regularly and eating the right kinds of foods. If I don't drink enough water, my meds don't work as well as they could. If I don't exercise, my meds don't work quite as well as they could. There are all sorts of things that can play a part in your medications and your therapy methods being as effective as possible. Those things all make up self-care. And it's important to practice. So now that we've talked about a few of those, I want to touch on a few others. We've talked about sleep. We've talked about diet. We've talked a little bit about exercise, but another note on exercise. Exercise has shown to be as effective as an antidepressant in mild to moderate depression over 6 to 9 months, and over longer periods of time, sometimes even more effective in mild to moderate depression as an antidepressant. Some of these things aren't just taking care of yourself to make your meds work. Some of them actually, like, improve your moods and help create a better state. That's really good. The other things are your body naturally cleanses and works through things. When you do things like exercise, they're really important. You are made to move. You are made to do stuff. When God put Adam in the garden and said, go, take authority over this thing, he did not say, sit on your butt and just hang out. He said, take care of it. And anyone who's ever been a farmer knows that is a lot of work. It is not a small amount of work to take care of horticulture. It's a lot of work. And Adam gets to do a lot of work. That's what you're made for. You are made to do a lot. So do stuff. Move, create space, all of that. That's where this next slide comes in. Sleep, exercise, diet, these are key things if you want to make sure that you feel better. Now, there's a lot of other things that also come up around mental health issues, and they get tagged as good self-care. These things like media, natural remedies, just feel better, oils, prayer, community, engaging spirituality. I want to knock through each of these. So let's knock through each one of these one at a time. Media. Let's start out there. Since the invention of the iPhone, there have been numerous studies done that show anxiety has gone up in direct relation to smartphone use. It seems that when we plug in, it actually dramatically affects us, and it hurts us. So, you know, a lot of us have jobs where we have to stay plugged in some way to social media. You know, I've run companies for the last, goodness, long time, and we have to be on social media to promote our companies. There are engagements that you just have to make. So do that. But if you can, try to stay off Instagram for 16 hours. You know, don't watch TikTok videos for 22 hours. You have to disengage to be able to fully engage yourself. So disengage with the media. It's taking up that space so that you can engage with other things. Natural remedies, are they helpful? Sometimes, you know, having the right vitamins and nutrients in your body can be really beneficial. That said, for you, is it going to be the only thing that you need? I have no idea. Meet with your psychiatrist. Meet with your doctor. Talk to them. If they have some things and they say, hey, we're going to try some medications. We're also going to supplement these other things. Great. Do it. Take care of yourself. Make sure that things are moving in that right direction. But always run this by your doctors too. Don't just try and say, I'm going to just do my own thing and I won't need any additional help. What I've seen personally working with mental health is that there aren't silver bullets with this stuff. You can't say one modality is going to work and another isn't going to work. Instead, what we often find is that it takes a combination of things. So if you need to increase your nutrient density and stuff, great, do it. You might need to do that along with a number of other different factors like self-care, medication, sleep, diet, exercise. You might have to do it all. I have to do pretty much all of it. And when I do that, I get permission to live. What about the just feel better approach? Does that actually help? Can you just feel better about your mental health issues? Generally, no. Generally, it doesn't work. Most of us try that right away. Most of us will tell you that we're having problems after we've tried that and exhausted all of our options. So, in general, yeah, should you try and stay positive? Yes. Have you probably tried that? Probably. So I don't think it's really great help. A lot of people around the United States have said, hey, have you tried essential oils? My wife and I actually enjoy essential oils for a couple things. It's great. But I am not using them as my only modality towards health, right? These are not the silver bullet. If you want to add them to something you're doing, great. But please do not treat anything like the one thing. The one thing that you're looking for is to get healthy, and that might take a lot of stuff. So please don't treat it like the only thing. What about prayer? Does prayer work? Absolutely. Studies have even shown that prayer specifically works in some ways the same way as exercise does in relieving mild or moderate depression. It's amazing. On top of what you believe God can do in the midst of it. So, I mean, there's studies about just the act of prayer, and then there's what God can do on top of that. Pray a lot. But it's important to note that when Jesus was walking through healing people in the New Testament, not everybody got healed. And when we see descriptions of how Jesus did his ministries, those are not prescriptions on how you need to act. Those are descriptions of what Jesus did. So if you're speaking with God and he says you need to pray for healing, pray for healing. But know that some of us, like me, have wanted that for a long time and God has said no. And that's okay. How about community? Community has got to be the answer. Get around people, right? Yes, community helps. Alone, these issues fester and grow and they get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But when you're around other people, you have opportunities to be around other people and to enjoy their company. And if you're an extrovert like me, that's great. Go be around other people. Go get in community. My wife is an introvert who needs 2 to 3 people in her life to feel really great. Does she need people? Yeah, but not like I do. She needs just a few people on a regular basis that she can touch in with, and then she's fine. do what you need to do with community. And I want to give you the permission to release the expectations of what that needs to look like. For me, I have like extrovert problems. I need to meet with a lot of people, and I do best when I do. So during the pandemic, my wife's mental health has been phenomenal. She's loved it. And I am lonely. So now that the pandemic is coming to a place where things are starting to open up, I'm starting to do better. But she's still in a space where she's doing great because she's had the opportunities to take the space that she needs. She doesn't need the expectation that she needs 100 people in her life. She needs the few that she has, and she needs to go deep with them. I also needed to release the expectation that I could be fine with just a couple people in my life that I could touch base with on a regular basis. That's not me. I do better in crowds. And so for me, what community looks like is very important. The one thing I would say about community is community needs to be deep enough that you actually benefit from it. You can't just talk about surface level things all the time. You do need community that will touch on deeper topics with you. I do not have the capacity not to talk about deeper subjects. Like, small talk is great, but we're going to talk about hard stuff. That's just me as a person. But if you can just talk small talk all the time, know that you need to go deeper. You need to touch on where you're at, and you need to have community around you that supports you. That might be a small community, but find that as well. Finally, what about engaging spirituality? Engaging spirituality is really interesting because studies have basically shown that if your spirituality points you to a position where you believe God is benevolent towards you, you will improve so much. Studies have also shown that general church membership helps people with depression and anxiety, but that in really judgmental or toxic environments, it can actually make things worse. So, in general, this is really good. It's phenomenal, in fact. But there are certain situations where it's not going to be helpful. And in those certain situations, it's important to give yourself a little bit of leniency and a little bit of credit and just engage how you can. We'll talk a lot more about engaging spirituality in the next few weeks because we'll talk a lot more about this integration between spirituality and mental health. And that is really where this comes together. Because your spirituality can't just exist on its own apart from your life. It has to integrate with your life. And so engaging that process is incredibly healing and beneficial. It's also hard work. But what's really beneficial that's not hard work? So finally, I want to give you one of the greatest tools in the world for working with self-care. This is it. Halts. Are you hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or stressed? Now, usually when I teach in classrooms, I have students raise their hands and say, okay, how many of these are you right now? Are you hungry? Are you angry? Are you lonely? Are you tired? Are you stressed? And I have students raise their hands and hold up the number of fingers that they're at right then. And usually everyone, I have closed their eyes. So they're sitting there with their eyes closed. They hold their hand up. And almost always, the majority of them are 3 or 4, and sometimes even 5. Now, this tool actually comes from Alcoholics Anonymous. The S was an addition that I heard from a counselor and I loved, but normally the rule of thumb is HALT, H-A-L-T. Are you hungry, angry, lonely, or tired? Because these are physical cues that you are in a compromised state and you may relapse with alcoholism. But when you add S and add stressed in there, it's just, I use it as a signaling light of how well I'm doing and what's going on in my life and what I need to do to take care of myself physically. So, as a general rule of thumb, you can treat it, 0 or 1 is like a green light. 2 is like a yellow light. 3 is like a red light. And then 4 and 5 is just like extra red of what you should do to take care of yourself. So if it's 0 or 1, the right answer might be, you're doing fine right now. You don't need to do anything extra. Just notice. If you're 2 of those things, say you are hungry and tired, then it might be a good thing to fix one of those two things or both of those things. If you are three of those things, go fix them, because you're going to have a harder time if you know that you're hungry and you're tired and you're, you know, lonely. It's going to be hard to deal with that. So go ahead and fix something. I have noticed there have been entire periods of my life where I have been one or two of those. The pandemic has made so many people lonely and stressed at the same time that at any point in time, there are two of them, and then they can add those others additionally. I've also noticed in my life that if I am hungry, I am also angry, lonely, tired, and stressed, because I just don't do well when I'm hungry. I've also noticed that when I'm tired, I think that I'm hungry because it's a general cue for me, and I'm also often lonely and stressed or angry. So know where your cues are, how they line up, and the best way to do that is just by paying attention and by seeing it. It's also one of the greatest tools ever if you have kids. If your kid is acting up like mine do on occasion, you can ask the question, are they hungry? Because I can feed it and it might start acting like my son or daughter again. Is it angry? Do I need to find out why before it seems like it turns back into my son or daughter again? Is it lonely? Does it just need some time with me? Is it tired? Does it need a nap? Is it stressed? I use the word it because sometimes my kids act like little monsters instead of like my kids. And normally it's because they're hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or stressed. So you can use that anytime, free of charge, on those relationships. I've noticed as well with medications, if my meds don't feel like they're working right, often it's because these things are off. Often it's because I haven't eaten, so my blood sugar levels aren't great. It's because I'm tired and I haven't rested well. It's because I've got a lot going on, so I'm thinking and churning through so much anger or so much stress. Or I'm feeling lonely, so I'm just not at a place where I'm present and I'm ready to give my 100%. And in any of those cases, it seems to compromise what's going on with me physically and what's going on with me emotionally. So, if you see that you're not feeling 100%, this is a great place to start. And then you can move on to, you know, have I taken my meds? Have I gone to therapy? All of that right from there. So, these are great tools. If you follow these tools, there is a much, much greater likelihood that you will experience stability with mental health issues. If you do not use these tools, there is much less probability that you will experience stability with your mental health issues. This is just the tools that you need to get by. It's a lot easier to build a wall with a hammer and nails than it is to build it without. And these are your hammers and nails in this mental health journey. So frame it up, start building. And this may be a hard and, you know, harrowing journey through this, but if you do this, it can actually be pretty fun. You know, when you start realizing that hungry, angry, lonely, tired, stressed, that these are the things that your spouse can call out, these are things that you can both rely on, that you can work on your therapist and you can talk about your psychiatrist, and these things, you can start laughing about them. Because you can say, yeah, I really was kind of crazy. Yeah, I really was kind of not in my right mind at all. Then those things that you did in your right mind, they become a little bit humorous and you can have a little more fun with them. Now, we've went through a lot in this section. We are going to continue going through additional things in the next section like this. So hold on, get your notepads ready, and we'll get ready for that next section in section 5, part 2.